You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
To the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 8th of October 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. And we are live today because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Matt, good day to you, sir. How are you doing?
Well, I can't. I'm ringing off the hook with people demanding we talk about the violence in Kyrgyzstan, that this is the center of the world. I'm sorry to the audience that we've taken so long to finally tackle this essential topic.
Well, it is a country that most people really haven't heard of or heard much of what goes on there. Kyrgyzstan, where is it? Well, I can let you know that it's close to China. What is important about it? Well, it was a satellite state of the USSR. So what is important about it now? Well, it is a Russian ally. And there is another color revolution going off in Kyrgyzstan, the same as we see in Belarus, similar to the war that we see that is kicking off in Armenia. Suddenly, all these countries that are friendly with Russia have got all this unrest happening. That is what is interesting about it. So first off, the quote we have here is from Sputnik. They say the mass protests broke out after Kyrgyzstan voted in a general election on Sunday, and the preliminary results revealed that only four parties collected enough votes to get seats in the legislature, including two pro-government parties, Birimdik and Mekinim Kyrgyzstan, and two centrist parties, the Kyrgyzstan Party and Butan Kyrgyzstan. About 2,000 supporters of those parties that failed to pass the 7% vote threshold to gain parliamentary seats gathered at Bishkek's Alatu Square on Monday morning to demand a revision of election results. They accused the government of falsifying the election results and vote buying. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization has, meanwhile, described Sunday's elections as free and legitimate, in what was echoed by the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, which praised the work of Kyrgyzstan's Central Elections Commission. The CEC in turn pledged to investigate complaints related to alleged violations at 31 polling stations during the voting. So what is going on here, Matt? Because I would have thought if the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, if they're saying, oh, well, it was free and legitimate, it was absolutely fine, I would have thought we would have had some American or European NGOs saying, oh, no, this was terrible, there was vote rigging and all the rest of it. But it says here the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe praised the work of the Elections Commission. So what's going on here?
Well, I'm still suspicious about the nature of this uprising. Usually when the U.S. is involved in overthrowing a government, it's done it in Kyrgyzstan twice now, there's a ready-made, well-financed person or party that's going to take over. And that's not the case here. None of these factions can agree. They're all very young. They're all very urban. They're definitely close to the West in that sense, although I can't say all these younger parties are necessarily pro-American. But when you have the SCO and the OSCE agreeing on something, generally speaking, they probably were legitimate elections. But what you have is some Western, smaller Western finance parties, at least some of them were Western finance, that didn't get what they wanted. And I guess this is what you do now when you lose an election. You attack the parliament building. But it hasn't done them any good. It reminds me more of Libya. Or Iraq rather than Ukraine in that sense, because it's just pure chaos right now. I was being slightly sarcastic before, but Kyrgyzstan is significant in the sense that the U.S. were thrown out of there. In 2014, their Air Force base removed. It is a transit point for drugs, and it has a huge border with China and Kazakhstan. So this is a and the border it has with China is in Xinjiang, where the so-called Uyghur hoax is going on, as I've talked about many times. So the CIA is all over this country, and it only has 8 million people. But as always, some of these smaller countries can be the most significant.
I thought the American airbase was still there. I thought I read that they basically paid more rent for it, something like 60 times as much rent, because the Kyrgyzstan government voted to kick them out, and it was something like 8-1. And then the Americans offered them more money, and they were allowed to stay. So has something else happened since then, Matt?
Yeah, I believe what you're talking about there, that was 2009, one year before the CIA overthrew President Bakiyev and installed one of their stooges in place. But since 2014, it's been turned over to the Kyrgyz military, which has all of about 8,000 people in it.
Because there's also Russian bases there. But getting back to what you were saying there, when your party loses the election, you throw your toys out the pram. I mean, the primary example of that is the Democratic Party in America, what they've done against Donald Trump. But of course, we're also seeing this in Belarus, and now we're seeing total anarchy in Kyrgyzstan. Representatives of the parties that make up the opposition demanded a transfer of state power to the People's Coordination Council. The agency has received at its disposal a ready-made draft decision, which is going to be signed by representatives of all parties included in the NCC. In it, the proposed transfer of state power to the NCC is included, as is the NCC receiving the full functions of the state. First of all, the NCC wants to dismiss all judges and employees of the prosecutor's office, the Ministry of Internal Affairs, and other bodies that contributed to the, quote, illegal decisions of the anti-popular regime of S. Jimbikov and the Matromov clan, close quote. In addition, representatives of the Kyrgyzstan, Mekonym Kyrgyzstan, and Birimdik parties are removed from power for 10 years. For the second day, anarchy has been observed in Kyrgyzstan. Officials of the previous government resigned en masse, and the vacated positions were hastily taken by anyone and everyone. Several coordination councils have appeared that promised to return Kyrgyzstan to legality, but they have failed. Only the parliament remains in power, but the deputies cannot collect the necessary quorum for making decisions. Against this background, robberies and attacks all over the capital are spreading. And I have to say, this actually comes from Kyrgyzstan itself. This is from Kyrgyzstan Today that you have translated, Matt. Well, it sounds like there's absolute chaos going on here, if anybody's just being put into these positions, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it gives the idea that this NCC is popular. Although, you know, you have plenty of people who wouldn't mind judges being retired, it's far from a universal institution. Kyrgyz politics seems to be divided by clan allegiance, but also between northern and southern factions. You know, the first president after independence, Akayev, was from the north, Bakayev is from the south, and they seem to go back and forth. And in fact, any civil war that may break out will certainly probably be over drugs, but over their policy towards China, but definitely geographic, northern and southern clan factions. So I'm not certain at all that the NCC is and again, they're not even claiming to be a government. It's constantly in flux. You have so many factions all over the place. You know, localities have their own factions. Regions have their own factions. Then, of course, you have the Uzbek minority, maybe like 14% of the population. And it should be noted, and I've read this before, you mentioned it before the show, that the population of the capital in the far north of the country is almost over 10% Jewish. And their role in this hasn't as yet become clear. The other thing to note, of course, is that these, with a few exceptions, the past presidents of Kyrgyzstan haven't been consistent between East and West. The odd thing about this is that the president that's just been more or less overthrown, Jimbikov, had a tendency to be pro-American for a while. He's looking for investment from South Korea, Japan, the U.S., the U.K., which I'm sure is going to dry up now. But to think that he's, you know, 100% pro-Russian is simply false. His predecessor was more pro-Russian than he was. But these guys have a tendency to go back and forth. You know, they play China off against the U.S. They play Russia off against the U.S. And that seems to be how politics works there. And don't forget Kyrgyzstan. I mean, the point of the Minsk air base was to supply, not just supplying the Afghan war, which is becoming irrelevant, but a major CIA base for penetrating Western China, which the American media have been obsessed with over the last couple of years. So this is significant for that reason. But usually what happens is that, you know, a president comes to power claiming to be pro-American. The minute he becomes pro-Russian, even for a short time, he gets overthrown. And that's what's happening here. I think as far as the prosecutor's office is concerned, to the extent that these protesters have any legitimacy at all, it's because the drug trade, the Klan involvement in the drug trade is huge. And the Bakiyev presidency, which ended in 2010, he took over the drug trade himself and abolished their own version of the DEA. He began killing drug dealers, but only so his people can then take it over. So drug money is a huge part of this. And so maybe I'm not necessarily endorsing what's happening on the street, but they may have some point when it comes to drugs.
Well, it's also one of the most corrupt countries in the world, according to the Corruption Index. Well, let's have a look at the source of the discontent. Russia's CSTO mutual defense ally and fellow Eurasian Union member Kyrgyzstan has been suddenly thrown into yet another crisis earlier this week after a long simmering power struggle between the current and former presidents finally turned violent. And I have to say, this is actually from August last year. Former President Atambayev was stripped of immunity earlier this summer and charged with corruption by incumbent President Jembikov, his former protege, but he refused to comply with previous requests for his surrender. The authorities therefore dispatched special forces to serve a warrant for his arrest, but they were met with gunfire at Atambayev's compound outside the capital. The initial operation ended in a total failure, but he finally agreed to give himself up the day after. The former leader claimed that he's a victim of political repression, while the current one says that his predecessor just blatantly violated the constitution by resisting arrest. Among his other alleged offences, especially after he admitted to firing on the forces that were sent to arrest him. In turn, Atambayev called on his supporters to protest in Bishkek, raising fears that the latest violence might spiral into a color revolution, or even a civil war in the worst case scenario, given the unstable Central Asian country's history of unrest in recent years. The core of the current problem appears to be that Atambayev assumed that he'd be able to control Jembikov and therefore continue to exercise indirect influence over the state indefinitely. But his successor had other plans and decided to assert his independence by holding his former patron to account for his alleged violations of the law. The incumbent might have done so as part of a genuine anti-corruption drive, but he could very well have also had political motives in dismantling the shadow network that his predecessor had established and which might have been functioning as a state within a state. After all, earlier constitutional changes made it so that Kyrgyz presidents can only serve 1 6-year term in office, so it is possible that Atambayev wanted to continue functioning as the de facto head of state through various proxies, both official ones like Jembikov and unofficial ones like the armed supporters who had already assembled at his compound when the first unsuccessful raid was attempted. So influential was Atambayev, even after serving his term, that he still maintained ties with Putin and even visited him in Moscow late last month in a last-ditch Russian-mediated attempt to avoid what ended up being the inevitable standoff that just took place. So it looks here like Putin backs Atambayev. Is that correct, Matt?
Yeah, it's my opinion that Atambayev is the pro-Russian candidate here. And one of the first things that the mob did was break into the prison where he was being held after the incident that you just read about and freed him. Atambayev was the one who brought Kyrgyzstan into the customs union, which is, you know, the Russian version of the EU and the Russian version of NATO, which you also just mentioned. He was the one who made sure that the Americans pulled out in 2014. He's been talking about the need for increased investment and general better relations with Russia. And there's Russians in that country and vice versa, a substantial number, in fact. But at the same time, one of the reasons that the U.S. wasn't vehemently opposed to him is that he also advocated more or less energy independence from Russia. So it goes, you know, it goes back and forth. There, Russia has the Kant air base there. But then, you know, he's also gone after the EU and NATO in various ways. So it's really tough to tell where this guy stands. But generally speaking, you know, he's playing them off one against another. But if you had to pick one pro-Russian politician, it would definitely be him. So the fact that these protesters freed him, one of the first things that they did, suggests that maybe the U.S. either is not behind it or that they're just waiting to see what's going to happen.
Well, there are some very serious security implications for Russia in all of this. If we move forward again to today, to this week, Global Research article, from the Russian perspective, Kyrgyzstan's capture by Western-backed political forces could lead to long-term security implications. The state's potential internal collapse could turn it into a regional exporter of terrorism, especially throughout the volatile Fergana Valley, but also across China's neighboring region of Xinjiang, if a new government decides to host Uyghur terrorists. The soft security consequences are that Kyrgyzstan's Color Revolution government could reduce its commitment to the CSTO and Eurasian Union, up to and including the country's potential withdrawal from these organizations, if the new power structure isn't co-opted by Russian-friendly forces first. It is possible, however, that Moscow might succeed in mitigating the blow to its geopolitical interests in the scenario of a regime change in Bishkek, since it had previously worked very closely with Atambayev, who is the most likely candidate to seize power, either directly or by proxy, though only if it can prevent a civil war from breaking out first. That might necessitate a CSTO intervention, however, which is risky. As it stands, the US hybrid war containment of Russia is making progress along the western, southern, and eastern periphery of the Eurasian great powers' sphere of influence. Belarus is no longer as stable as it has historically been known for being. Armenia is still trying to trick Russia into going to war against Azerbaijan and, by extension, Turkey. And Kyrgyzstan is once again on the verge of a collapse that could take down the rest of Central Asia in the worst-case scenario. Having shrewdly avoided the first two traps, at least for the time being, Russia is now being challenged with the most serious crisis of the three after the latest events in Kyrgyzstan. The country's clan-based nature, proliferation of Western NGOs and Western meddling in its admittedly imperfect democracy make it extremely unstable, thus heightening the risks that any well-intended Russian military stabilization intervention via the CSTO could entail, perhaps explaining why one never happened in 2010 during more dangerous times. The Kremlin will therefore have to carefully weigh its options. In Kyrgyzstan, it seems to me that the biggest threat here is likely to be with these Uyghurs. Going into China, we know that America wants to destabilize China next. You've got this country that's right next to it. It's a Muslim country. They could quite conceivably start hosting these Uyghur militants to go into China and start trying to blow things up. Don't you think, Matt? I think that's the most serious threat here is the Uyghur one.
Yeah, and it's really important that Western China has been, you know, in the crosshairs of the CIA and MI6 for a long time. I know for a fact, I mean, there's too many people in the Russian press talking about the MI6 involvement in this violence. There's clearly a Jewish component to it in the capital. And if this writer is correct, it is an American-backed coup, in essence, with the purpose of trying to drag Russia into a quagmire. Although I think China maybe is equally involved because there's plenty of Chinese citizens in the country, especially in the mining industry. Russia is still involved in the oil industry there. So they clearly have an interest in it. China is going to have a base soon in the country. It doesn't have one now, but it's been in negotiations for a while. It's very possible that derailing those negotiations is one of the reasons that that this is going on. But it's important to note with all that is that one of the first targets of the violence has been the gold mines which is one of Kyrgyzstan's big exports. The largest gold mine in the world is in Kyrgyzstan. And even their urban offices came under attack. So it seems to me to be targeted. The attacks have been more or less professional, going through paperwork, stealing computers, this kind of thing. And actually, the including several Chinese-owned mines in the eastern part of the country have also been attacked. It's way too coordinated for it to be strictly coincidental. And the people who've done it seem to have known exactly what they were doing. And they've overwhelmed security. They were heavily armed. These weren't just random robbers. So hitting all the gold mines and their offices more or less at once can't be a coincidence. And as we all know, the U.S. is, you know, pretty much owns zero gold, and both China and Russia own tons and tons of it. This simply may be a Western way to get its hands on some of the largest gold mines on the planet.
Well, we pointed out earlier that there was interference from Western NGOs, and we also have evidence that the British have been involved in staging these protests. On the eve of the parliamentary elections, which will be held on October the 4th, and this comes from a September article, the British ambassador in Kyrgyzstan, Charles Garrett, made an attempt to unite all the protest forces in order to use the potential obtained against the current government. When the bulk of the local population was busy due to the coronavirus infection in sanitary and epidemiological measures, this British diplomat did not sit in isolation, but on the contrary, was engaged in the selection of protesters. In the period from April to August of this year, Garrett held a series of secret negotiations and consultations with the leadership of the party, Atamakin, Otekabayev, chairman of the Progress Fund, aide Turdyukulov, supporters of the former president of Kyrgyzstan, A. Atambayev, and R. Otunbayeva. The main point in the course of these conversations was the request of a high-ranking diplomat to discredit and compromise the parliamentary candidates from the current government. It would seem that the messenger of the citadel of world democracy should, on the contrary, publicly welcome the amazing diversity of Kyrgyz democracy, wishing success to its strongest representatives in fair political competition. But in practice, for some reason, there are behind-the-scenes cavernous attempts to influence the free and sovereign electoral process. As always, financial bonuses are attached to the words of Western operators. At the initiative of Garrett, $3 million was allocated for the functioning of the opposition sector in the Kyrgyzstan on behalf of the British Foreign Ministry's Conflict, Stability and Security Fund, as well as through the non-profit organisation Open Society Institute. So there we have Soros working alongside the British Foreign Ministry with their aptly titled Conflict, Stability and Security Fund. I mean, basically, they're destabilizing the country and affecting the security of it with this fund, doing the opposite of what they're actually claiming. But I'm interested to see that they're working alongside George Soros here. Is that why you picked this one out, Matt?
This is one of the most important reasons. It's very similar to his activities in Burma. People are talking about its implications for Russia and the CIA surrounding the Russian Federation. I think even more importantly, it has to do with China. China's soft underbelly is in the West, which is also Islamic. The media has invented the most ridiculous stories that apparently for no reason the Chinese have been killing Muslims there and putting them in camps with no actual evidence. But Johnson's law is in full effect, and so no one really knows anything. But I have the feeling that the current president was in the process of shutting that cross-border traffic, overthrowing him and putting someone like they mentioned, former president Otunbayeva, who was just there for a year, the only female president there, 2010-2011, who was strictly, you know, Soros Ford Foundation, 100%. You know, not only was she the first female president, but the only feminist probably in the entire country, entirely backed by foreign money. But if the previous president is the person who's going to go in, it's really hard to tell what he's going to do. If they try to bring her back in, then that's going to clearly be in the American interest. So just from that point alone, I have the feeling that that's the person that they want to, that person they've always wanted to install, Otunbayeva, from a decade ago. But And she's, of course, heavily involved in the drug trade as well. Soros has his eyes on two things, the gold trade and the drug trade. And Kyrgyzstan is more of a transit point, but it's an extremely powerful one. And up until recently, the presidency has been deeply involved in it.
You know, what amazes me is just the brazen way that there is foreign interference in sovereign nations' affairs. You've got a British diplomat there who is selecting protesters and giving them money to go and protest against the government. You imagine if there was a Russian there in America selecting protesters to go and protest against Joe Biden or Donald Trump. It would be an absolute scandal. But this just seems to go on all the time with the West interfering in these countries' politics, and they just seem to get away with it, and nobody points it out. If anybody does point it out, then it becomes Russian propaganda, I guess. Well, let's have a look at the resources that are up for grabs. In terms of natural resources, other than agriculture, which comprises a third of the gross domestic product, Kyrgyzstan has gold, uranium, coal, and oil. In 1997, the Kumtor gold mine opened one of the largest gold deposits in the world. Until recently, the state agency, Kyrgyzaltyn, owned all the mines and operated many of them as joint ventures with foreign companies. The Kumtor gold mine near the border of China is 100% owned by Canada's Centre of Gold Incorporated. Until the ouster of President Bakiyev, his son, Maxim, head of the State Development Fund, ran Kyrgyzaltyn, which is also the largest shareholder of Centre of Gold, the Canadian company that today owns Kumtor. Significantly, even though he has not been formally elected by Kyrgyz voters, Centaur in Toronto, perhaps with a nudge from the US State Department, has already announced that it has named Maxim Bakiyev's replacement as head of Kyrgyzaltyn, Alexei Elisiev, deputy director of the Kyrgyz State Development Agency, to the board of directors of Centaur. Kyrgyzstan also has significant reserves of uranium and antimony. Kyrgyzstan also has considerable remaining deposits of coal to an estimated 2.5 billion tons, especially in the Karakesh deposit in northern Kyrgyzstan. However, even more pivotal than the mineral riches is the major US Air Force base at Manas, Kyrgyzstan, opened within 3 months of the US declaration of a global war on terror in September 2001. Shortly thereafter, Russia established its own military airbase not far from Manas. Kyrgyzstan today is the only country in the world that hosts both Russian and American military bases. An uneasy state of affairs, to put it mildly. We've got quite some corruption there, haven't we? We've got nationalized oil there, or gold, whatever it is. And then you've got the guy that runs the State Development Fund is also working with Canada's Centaur Gold that 100% owns the actual gold mine. You've got some serious corruption there, Matt. But what do you make of this? These comments here?
Well, this is 10 years old. So the stuff about the Air Force base doesn't matter anymore. Although if the right person from the American point of view is put in charge here, it's coming back. This is really what it's all about. They do have their own limited oil. It's an extremely mountainous country. It's very hard to work, especially things like drilling or anything else. It's difficult for pipelines, but they work anyway. And these were state-owned enterprises, and we all know that the first thing the West wants to do anywhere is privatize them. Problem here is that Bakiyev, who probably the worst of the bunch, brought it under his own control. That's what he tended to do with all aspects of the economy, is use family members. So when he meant privatization, he kind of meant personally. But that hasn't been the case. The last thing in the world the U.S. wants, or the Canadians want, is these gold mines to be renationalized. And as I said before, the fact that the Chinese-owned gold mines in the East were attacked in a coordinated way suggests this is probably what's really happening. You know, paid mobs are a day-to-day thing. They're happening in America. It's happening everywhere. There's no doubt that the Soroses of the world want to bring these mines under their own control, taking it away from the presidency, taking it away from the state, and bringing it under their domination, and certainly kicking the Chinese out. Now, with the Chinese reaction to the violence against its people and its mining interests is a separate issue. China knows exactly what's going on here and how the U.S. is planning on financing this Uyghur movement, not to mention the Tibetan movement. The CIA has been involved in that for a very long time. China is not going to sit back here. China hasn't been talked about very much in this regard, partially, I think, because, well, no one really knows anything, and partially because this is really the target. Getting China involved in a war, I think, is far easier in this case than the Russians. Far more Chinese work there than Russians do. And gold mining is China's big investment there. Kyrgyzstan is a part of the Silk Road Initiative. All of this, you know, the U.S. wants to overthrow. But you're right. You know, the British are there picking protesters. I'm not sure so far it's going the way they want it. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. Ignorance even in the state is overwhelming. But just a couple of years ago, the CENTCOM general said, you know, the U.S. has given up on the country. So maybe that was too soon. But if that U.S. base gets reestablished, you know exactly who was behind this and why, and that it actually did go their way.
Well, it's just another part of the world that we need to be keeping an eye on, Kyrgyzstan. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.